Hello and welcome to the Human Factor Podcast, a series of conversations discussing the topics and themes influencing the world of work today. My name is Michael Esau.
My name is Simon Humphries.
We are delighted to be joined on this episode by Will Langston. Will has worked at the Timpson Group for 13 years. The Timpson Group is a family-owned retail business based in Manchester. Today, Will is Managing Director of Timpson Direct. Timpson Direct encompasses the group's vending, franchising, locksmiths, web, and international businesses. The vending business is the fastest growing business within the group. Will believes that the key to the growth of the group has been the continual development of the culture of upside down management. He feels a culture based on trust and kindness works when Timpson recruit colleagues with an amazing personality. At Timpson, everyone is equal, and it is Will's job to make sure his colleagues are happy in their jobs. To do this, the Timpson Group provide various benefits, such as free holiday homes, a dreams come true scheme, weekly lotteries, and mental health support. This has ensured Timpson has been one of the UK's best companies to work for over the last 18 years. Will lives in London with his wife Katie, their son Theo, and their dog Morgan. He spends more time and money on trains to and from Manchester than he would care to admit. Will, welcome to the Human Factor Podcast. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Really excited to get into some of the questions you've got for me today.
Will, being very candid, and you and I have been communicating and emailing on this topic for a good while. When Simon and I started off 2.5 years ago, we did a massive brainstorm on which organizations, which people, you know, would we like to meet, talk, discuss, because we think there's something really interesting. And Timpson was always on the pad. I think, like many people, you know, we follow a great interest. I think we actually mentioned to somebody, Simon and I were with somebody last week, and we said, oh, we're recording with Will at Timpson. And they went, don't they do great work in that area? And don't they do great work in that? And so I think there's a real recognition and a respect for who you are and what you do. And so for us today, this is a real privilege that we get to hopefully get behind the curtain a little bit and understand exactly what you do and how you do it and why you do it. So before we do that, let me just read the context. So the episode title is Creating the Happy Organization. And I think the word happy is always quite subjective in terms of what does it actually mean? And is it really that relevant? And does it add real value? So hopefully we'll get into that today. But so as the saying goes, happy employees often means happy customers. It's that simple. It's not rocket science. And we've been saying it for the last 50 years. Yet, do we achieve it? In the Gallup 2023 State of the Global Workforce, they revealed, based on their data, that 23% of the workforce is engaged, with 77% either disengaged or quiet quitting. Interestingly, the 23% is the highest score since Gallup had been capturing the data since 2009. So when you read through the report, you will see statements such as, we need to change how work is done, or we need to recognize that our most important asset is our people. These are statements that are made year in, year out, yet not much seems to change. So what is the secret? How do we actively engage our people? How do we help them to thrive, to grow, and be able to bring their best selves to work every day? A culture which is inclusive and built on trust, fairness, and inclusivity. So in this episode, we will explore this challenge in real detail with Will and delve into some of his tips and insights on how Timpson remain one of the UK's most successful and happy organizations. Can you tell us a little bit about Timpson for our audience who may not be aware of the company, what you do, how big you are, or and what is your sort of underlying DNA, if you like, your values as an organization?
Absolutely. So Timpson, well, the Timpson Group is a wholly family-owned business, been around for about 150 years now. And today we are a business of roughly 2,100 shops. We employ about 4,500 people in the UK and Ireland. We are Europe's biggest service retailer. And so what that means is when you go into one of our shops, and there's a number of different brands in the group, which I'll tell you a little bit about in a second, but when you go into our shops, you tend to be buying a service. We do sell products like shoe polish and photo frames, but the majority of our business is about offering a service to our customers. And we do that in a number of different brands. So we've got the Timpson shops, which many people know for being able to go and get their shoes repaired or their keys cut. We've got a photo business called Max Spielman, which is mainly based in the north, although we are starting to grow that business in the south as well now. And in a Max shop, you can go in with photos on your phone and have them put on a canvas or a mug, or have your ID photos taken, or a family portrait of you or your kids or your dog. And then we've got another business called Snappy Snaps, which is very similar to Max, but it's mainly based in London, and it's actually a franchise business. It's really the only part of our group that's franchised. And then we've got a dry cleaning business called Johnson's. We've got a chain of locksmiths, a sizable vending business, photo booths and photo kiosks and self-service key machines around the UK. And then being a family business, we've got a chain of pubs. And just recently, we added to that with a hotel in Morzine in the French Alps. In terms of the values and the culture that we have within the business, I suppose the two most important values would be that we treat everybody with trust and kindness. And those really are the pillars that the whole business is based upon. And we like to keep things simple. And we really do genuinely believe that if we look after our people, they'll look after our customers. And in turn, that will look after our finances. And so we don't try to do anything very clever. But where I think many businesses probably speak to those values and they don't necessarily follow them, that genuinely is the ethos with which we run the business.
And I think that's the key thing that we're trying to understand more about is you hear the words, but you don't see the action. You'll hear a term, oh, they get it. Yeah, but do they believe it? Do they truly believe it? We had the privilege of talking to Cirque du Soleil, Will, right? And we wanted to understand, how do you put on the greatest show on earth? And, you know, when we were hearing things like, to do the impossible, you know, you have to have a real ingrained culture. You know, we say no to the good, so we say yes to the grey. Excellence in our business doesn't happen by chance, it happens by choice. It's trying to get behind, well, what are the words, and then what is the action? And people won't be able to see this, unfortunately, we're doing the recording, but just behind your shoulder there, I can see, and be nice to people. It's clearly very, very visible also within your locations. So let's just then start to dig in a little bit and pick out some of these words around kindness and trust and also this word happy. So when we looked at employee engagement globally over the last 20 years, and certainly quoting the latest Gallup research, there is a challenge. Now, coming out of the pandemic, we saw many people leave jobs without having another role, such was their level of disengagement. It is a very fine line. Now, in James Timpson's new book, and James is the chief executive, that's correct, isn't it, of the group,
yeah.
It references the term happy. How important is that? And what do you believe creates that in a work context?
That's a really, really good question. I think I would just touch on the point you just made around Cirque du Soleil and how different businesses sort of the priorities they set within their organizations. And when I think about our business, I suppose probably the reason that we actually do really follow that ethos of looking after our people and really trying to make sure they're happy is that we measure very, very few things within our business. And I think that this would be something that would really surprise a lot of people if they spent time behind the scenes. But in terms of the things that we measure, we do a bit of financial reporting, but it's very light touch for a business of our size. We haven't got tons of data to rely on. We look at a very small number of metrics within the business to kind of really have an understanding of how we're doing. And the most important metric that we check on is the happiness of our colleagues. And we do that in a couple of different ways. So every single day in every site around our business, and you know, as I said, we've got about 2,100 shops, but also in all of our offices, support functions, and and at what we call our center of excellences or our centers of excellence, which is like where we do complicated shoe repairs or engraving jobs or phone repair jobs. Every single colleague is asked a really important question at the end of their day's work, and that is, how are you feeling? And they're asked to grade that on a scale of 1 to 10. So that we know if we've got colleagues who are less than an 8.5 out of 10 happy, we need to do something about that. And so their line manager is alerted to the fact that they might have a colleague within the part of the business that they look after that they need to go and have a chat with and check in with to see if there's anything that we can do to help. So that's the first measure that we have. And I think that that's a really, really useful tool, particularly for our area managers, where they're looking after, you know, maybe 100 souls, and they're responsible for the happiness of 100 souls that are all working remotely, in many cases on their own through the course of the day. So just being alerted to the fact they might have someone who isn't feeling 10 out of 10, they can give them a call, they can check in, and they can see if there's anything that we as a business can do to better support them in the short term to try and improve their general happiness. So that's the first thing that we do. The second thing that we do, which is on a more formal basis, is that we every year, once a year, run something called the Happy Index. And the Happy Index is what many other businesses would call their employee satisfaction survey, which would have 50 or 60 questions in it asking what they had for breakfast that morning, what they were having for dinner that evening, and many things in between. For us, we asked one very simple question, and that is, out of 10, how happy are you with the support you've received from your area team, manager, basically, how happy are you with the support you've been offered by your boss this year? And we asked them to grade that out of 10. Anything, again, less than an 8.5 out of 10 in our business is considered poor. You know, of all the things that we would expect of the managers and the leaders within our business, that is the one thing that really will mean you thrive in our business or you don't. So we know that if an area manager has a good happy index, they're going to have good numbers week in, week out. And so if an area manager has a good happy index, but perhaps poor figures, we know there's probably some other problem that we might be able to help them with. But if an area manager has a bad happy index and bad figures, it tends to kind of mean that they're not looking after their people well, and we need to do something to help them with that. There's a bit of a saying in our business that leaders can survive having poor figures because they tend to sort themselves out, they look after their people, but you won't survive two bad happy indexes.
Right. That's your sort of baseline. Before I bring Simon in, fascinating, in particular the colleagues every day, yes? Every day they are asked to rate, have they had, you know, a good day, basically. How do they complete that question?
We've got a system that kind of runs our business, which we call Barney's Dashboard. It's called Barney's Dashboard because the guy who works in our IT department who developed the system is called Barney. Barney's still with us today, and is a bit of a celebrity in the Timpson business. Effectively, that's how we record. You know, so we still use old-fashioned tools like you find in, you know, news agents around the country. We don't use EPOS. And so for our colleagues to be able to report their sales, they enter them in on Barney's Dashboard. It's also how they order their stock and you know, they can get training support and all sorts of other things. But when they enter their figures at the end of the day, they can't actually close off their cash sheet without answering that question.
Brilliant. Simon, fascinating, huh?
Absolutely. Well, I want to go back to where you started that answer, which was that you measure very little. Is that by design or is that by circumstance of where you are? You mentioned not having EPOS tills, that sort of thing, because it's unusual. We had a guest from TSG Hoffenheim, for example, football club, and they were saying that data is king. They, if anything, overmeasure because the data really gives them deep insight and potentially a competitive edge. So I'm interested in how you've flipped that on its head. I know you focus on those, you know, couple of metrics, which are hugely important. Does that mean you're not interested in the rest or you're just not able to get the rest?
So it's a really interesting question. Is it by design? Absolutely. So much so that we don't have many committees in our business, but we do have one committee, which we call Cut the Crap Committee. And that group is all about making sure that we don't let loads of useless reports and additional data and, you know, all of the different things that people might be interested in one week and not the other creep into the business and actually get in the way of people doing what we really want them to do, which is to spend time with their colleagues, spend time in our shops where the business runs and operates, and understand how we can better support the colleagues that serve customers and put money in the till, because they are the kings and queens in our business. It is absolutely by design. We actually probably during COVID or pre-COVID actually, we let a bit too much data and reporting creep into the business. And we definitely pulled back on that. Don't get me wrong. There are certainly, you know, there are lots of reports in our business and there's all sorts of information that you can get at. But I think that it's testament to the way the culture that James and his father, John, have built, that the number one most important measure in our business and really the thing that all of our leaders are measured on in terms of their job performance is, you know, how happy are your colleagues with the support that you offer them year in, year out?
Brilliant. Simon and I often say, you know, that when a human being goes home at the end of the day and says, did I have a good day? That is the ultimate. And it's like, what needs to happen for that to happen? And yet, when you look at the data and you look at all the convention, that's not happening. So for you to say that is the measure, and we ask it every single day, and actually you can't not answer it because you can't close down your business. Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. One of the things we hear a lot, right, is about how do you get engagement? So from people, it's a fine balance between being committed and compliant, right? So I'm doing things because I have to, or I'm doing things because I want to. So how important is trust in that engagement process? You talked about trust already, but how do you engender that trust?
It's a really interesting question. Yeah, our business really honestly cannot operate without trust. And there's an important reason for that, which is, we don't do rules. So we've only got two rules in our business. The first one is put the money in the till. And the second one is act the part. And by that, it's kind of all of the common sense stuff, like turn up on time, wear the right clothes, be nice to customers, shower, smell good, all of the stuff that kind of 99% of people just get as common sense. You know, they would just do it as a matter of course. And so after those two things, there are no rules. If you want to paint your shop pink, paint your shop pink. Wow. If you want to give customers something for free, give them something for free. And actually, we encourage that. We want more customers being given stuff for free. So because we have only two rules in the business, we've got to employ the right colleagues and then trust them to get on with it. And we really do allow our colleagues to treat their shops. Many people ask us, you know, are you a franchise business? Well, you know, we have a franchise business in Slappy Slaps, but all of the other 1,950 shops are corporately, in inverted commas, corporately owned and operated. But we encourage all of the colleagues within those shops to run them as if they were their own. And that, I think, is probably the best demonstration of the trust that we have within the business, is that really we don't want rules creeping in. We're going to give you the total authority. And we actually put this up in every single shop, a picture of our chairman, John, which says, you know, the colleagues in this shop have the total authority to do whatever they need to give you amazing service. And they do. So we've got colleagues who grow chili plants in their shops. We have colleagues who have painted their shops pink. You know, one colleague who, because one of their regular customers was going on holiday, they offered to look after their pet parrot. So we had a parrot in a shop for a week. And, you know, that is really what brings the personality, you know, and the character of our business, is all of the wonderful people that work within it.
Brilliant. It's a rich tapestry, isn't it? And do you see yourself then connected to that community that they serve, essentially? You know, is it that sort of connection that you're striving for?
Yeah, it's a great question. Actually, interestingly enough, we were recording some videos the other day. Our sort of the senior leadership teams, it would be called in most corporates, around our sort of each of our journeys through the business. And James was sort of talking around what we look for in colleagues. He wants our colleagues to be kind to our customers, but also to become part of the communities that their customers, you know, that they serve customers within. And very recently, actually, you know, which I think is a good demonstration of how important this is to us, we've actually added to all of our job descriptions that every colleague has to complete a random act of kindness for either a customer or another colleague every day. We want to be, community is important to us, and we want our colleagues to be part of the communities that they work in.
I follow Timson, I follow James, I read his tweets, as many people do. And they're always a delight to read, you know. So, for example, if a colleague has a child, you know, starting school, you know, new term, new school, whatever, they get the day off. Now that's an organizational act of kindness, if I've ever seen, you know. Are there other examples of that that you have at Timson?
Yeah. And this is going to be almost a test, and I'll be in trouble for not listing all of them. Janet, who is our director of happiness, is sort of, she's responsible for looking after all of our benefits and would be far better placed than I to list them all. But look, I'll give you some of the, sort of the headline ones that I think our colleagues probably appreciate the most, or those that we're now sort of being best known for. So we've got, I think, 13 or 14 holiday homes around the UK, which are free to use for our colleagues and their families, and also for families that are fostering children. So that's something that we do because John and his late wife, Alex, fostered over 90 kids over the years. We give everybody their birthday off. We have crisis loans. We give people time off if their pets pass away. We have a weekly lottery whereby a colleague within the business is selected at random and is rewarded with £1,000. We've got scratch cards, which are for leaders within the business to give to their colleagues to recognize good work. And within any of those scratch cards, you know, you can win a meal out on James Timpson. You can win vouchers. You can win cash rewards. So there are loads of benefits within our business. I think probably what we're really trying to do now is focus a bit like the benefit that you mentioned, Michael, around giving colleagues time off when their children first start school. We've sort of, I think, tackled a lot of those cash benefits that are really important, don't get me wrong, and they're really useful in helping us reward colleagues for amazing work or for going the extra mile. But actually, we're really looking now at all of those benefits that perhaps it's just to recognize an important time in a colleague's life. So when their kid first starts school, or, you know, there are lots of other milestones that we're trying to find better ways of celebrating. And we want to be there with the colleague and sort of helping them understand that they are a part of our family. And yes. So if we can do something to help them celebrate an important occasion in their family, then we want to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that, you know, we talk a lot about the whole self and the person bringing the whole self. But again, I think for years, when people used to talk about moments that matter, they were work moments that matter, not human people-centered moments that matter. Simon, I think you've got a follow-up question, so I'm going to come over to yourself.
I've got a two-part question. Part one is, where do I apply? Because this sounds absolutely amazing. I think part two is the more serious bit, though, which is, help me connect the dots, though, because you are also running a business, and businesses must have some degree of controls in place to make profit. How do you marry the two together? You know, all of those things you've described, you know, the trust, the, you know, random acts of kindness, give stuff away for free. I get all of that, but equally, they're also a business that try and make profit.
100%. And recently, actually, I invited a guest, a friend actually, who runs a charity in London, to come and sit in on one of our board meetings, just to see how we do things and get a bit of an insight. And I asked him after the meeting, I said, you know, were you surprised at how commercial we are? Because I think lots of people, they hear us talking about the things that we do for our colleagues and the nice benefits that we offer, and they get an impression that we are ultra fluffy. There's kind of, there's no teeth, there's no commercial focus. It's just, you know, all rose petals and sunshine, and we muddle through and happen to just be lucky that we make a profit. We're actually really, really commercial. And whilst we don't have a huge amount of controls, we feel an absolute responsibility, a particular senior, yes, the senior leaders within our business, we feel a massive responsibility to ensure that we're a really profitable business so that we can go on supporting the 4,500 colleagues and their families that we currently support. When we sort of talk about how we manage that while still being able to empower our colleagues and trust them to get on with the job, it all comes down to one really, really simple thing. And that is employ the right people and let them get on with it. And so we do get that wrong on occasion, but when we do, we are pretty brutal actually about quickly helping that colleague that doesn't fit with our business, doesn't fit with our culture, to find their happiness elsewhere. Yeah. And to help them become a customer. Because, you know, and we'll always do that in the right way, but we think it's really unfair to have a great colleague who gets it 100%, is kind of bought into working within our business, and to have them work alongside someone that perhaps is not a 9 or a 10 out of 10, is not prepared to sort of do those basic things that we talked about, like washing, wearing the right clothes, turning up on time. If that's happening, we feel a responsibility to very, very quickly move that colleague on. And as we like to say, help them become a customer.
It's this magic word, Will, isn't it, of culture. We've talked about it so much. I think about it a lot. It's almost intangible in some respects. It's brittle. It's not it's something that moves with the mood and moves with the disruptions. It moves with the wind. But that's ultimately, because I suppose what Simon and I are looking to help our listeners is how can this scale? How can I take some of these ideas? Can I repeat some of this? What are the dependencies? Because, you know, when you read about John and James and you read about the family and you read about who they are and the fostering, I mean, it's ingrained in their DNA. They are just super, super kind, loving people with total respect for other human beings. So I suppose where I want to add another question is to be able to live this kind of culture is more than just believing it. It's truly, truly living it. So is it almost, if somebody was listening and said, oh, I really want to repeat some of the things that Timpson are doing in my organization, but I'm not sure that my leadership is going to believe it.
Absolutely. I mean, and look, Michael, funny enough, that question gets asked fairly frequently. You know, I'll talk at events or sit on panels and you know, afterwards people will come up and say, oh, you know, I'd love to try that. And to be totally honest with you, we've nicked loads of these ideas from other people. You know, so they might not have been doing all of them, but for example, birthdays off, you know, that's something that came from Julian Richer of Richer Sounds. He's actually a good friend of James's, and James decided that was something he wanted to do in the business. This is going back, you know, 10, 15 plus years ago. And we're lucky enough to go behind the scenes of other businesses and speak to other leaders within other organizations. We pick up little tidbits all the time where we think, you know, that's something really nice that we could probably land in our business. I suppose the difference between us and many other businesses is that, you know, we're family owned. We haven't got any shareholders to answer to. And so if we kind of, we fancy doing something, we kick it around a table for 5 minutes. And if the answer at the end of that conversation is, yeah, let's do it, you know, the following day it's done. That gives us the flexibility to be able to implement loads of this stuff without having those question marks like you might get in a big PLC around, you know, what's the, you know, obviously we look at the cost of all of these benefits that we introduce, but I think there's probably such a focus on, you know, how's that going to land? How will it be perceived? Who's, you know, what will some people think of it and others think of it? Yeah, it's, so for us, if we think it's the right thing to do, if we think our colleagues are going to appreciate it, and we think it will have a material impact on their enjoyment, their happiness within our business, whilst also making commercial sense in that it's not going to bankrupt us, yeah, we'll do it.
We'll do it.
So one of the things that you're renowned for is hiring people who have offended and potentially spent time in prison. Can you give an insight into that strategy and approach? Because it is, you are known for it. It is a big, big part of your organization. Could you just help us understand that as a strategy?
Absolutely. So about what I was about to say 10%, but it's not actually, it's gone up recently. It's about 12% of the colleagues that work within our business have lived experience of prison or have a previous criminal conviction. And the whole way this came about is that going back, I don't know, 12 or 13 years, James was visiting a prison near Manchester, and he was being shown round by a prisoner who he actually, you know, got on with really well. And at the end of the tour of the prison, James slipped him his card and said, look, when you get out, I'll give you a job. And that specific colleague still works for us. He's been managing one of our shops in the north for a number of years now. And when James had that experience, he realized that there was quite a sizable proportion of the population that had criminal convictions that were not being touched by other businesses because of a mistake they may have made in the past. And so really for us, you know, it was a balance of everyone thinks we do it because it's some philanthropic mission. Mm-hmm. For us, it really is a balance. You know, we do feel it's the right thing to do to give people a second chance. But actually, probably above that or in front of that, it seems like a no-brainer to us that there is a huge number of people in the UK that have got a criminal conviction of one kind or another, many of those being low-level convictions. And actually, you know, the stats vary, but many people say, you know, one in four people have a conviction more serious than a driving offence. Well, if that's the case, if we add one person onto this call, one of us could be one of those people quite easily. And so does that mean that we don't want to give that person the opportunity to have a career just because of a mistake that they may have made in the past? So the work that we do with those colleagues is kind of it's just become ingrained in the day-to-day. So we see that as just another route to recruiting great people. It's not kind of very specialist. Obviously, we've learned over the years perhaps additional support that we need to offer colleagues that come through that channel of recruitment. But other than that, we really do recruit in prison in exactly the same way that we recruit outside prison. So we're just looking for someone who's engaging, who's buzzy, who's got a really interesting personality. We don't care if they can cut keys or repair shoes, because to be quite honest with you, we can teach anybody to do that. I mean, they managed to teach me to do it, for God's sake. So if we can teach me, you know, we can teach anybody else to do all of the necessary skills or give them all the necessary skills that they'll need to be able to offer those services to our customer. To be honest with you, whilst we're sort of getting a bit of a reputation for this, everybody employs people with criminal convictions. They just don't know about it. We do. That's the only difference.
Mm. Yeah, good point. And I believe you put photo machines now in some of the prisons, I think, where people can take the photos and aid the process.
Yeah, so we've got academies in a number of prisons. So in Newhall near Leeds, we've got a Max Spielman Academy. And then in Sutton, just south of London, we've got a Snappy Snaps Academy. And basically, for all intents and purposes, if you go and visit one of those, it is just like walking into one of our Max Spielman shops or our Sutton shop. And we've got sort of a workshop in Thorncross Prison, which is our shoe repair centre of excellence. And we have, at times gone by, we've had Timpson Academies we have one in Liverpool Prison, for example, doing everything but cutting keys for obvious reasons. But yeah, you know, it's we do that because we see that as a really simple route to getting colleagues who are near the end of their prison sentence. We get them trained. in probably the last 3 months. That's sort of the sweet spot that we look for. And then on the day that they're released, they're met by their new area manager, and they go and they start their new job.
Brilliant. I think that's absolutely fabulous. Brilliant. I've got a couple of more sort of key questions, but one in particular. You've given us so much today about your culture, the trust, the no rules, and also the upside down model, right? That's what you talk about. But can we get a lens, however, into your sort of leaders and your managers, and how you actually prepare them for that kind of model? And that's not simple. One of the difficulties I think every organization faces today is how do you create a level of leadership that's consistent and drives the right behaviors? Because at the end of the day, every human being is different. And just because they wear a badge that says I'm a manager, it doesn't actually mean that they're naturally orientated to that role. So how does Timpson ensure, with a very specific culture, with not many rules, and a lot of empowerment and a lot of autonomy, how do you prepare your leaders to support that kind of culture?
And when you add into that, actually, Michael, that it's really hard work. You know, retail in general is hard work. And you know, Simon, you asked kind of, are there any jobs going? It isn't for everybody what we do. And that's just, you know, if you join our business and you want to go and work in a shop, that isn't for everybody. So some people just, they will not like working in a Timpson shop or a Mac shop and all of the kind of the things that come with that. Even less people are then able to go on and lead within that, you know, our business and in the style and the culture that we hold so dearly. You've kind of touched on a couple of the reasons that it's difficult, but effectively what you're asking people to do is deliver really great results, but they're not allowed to tell people what to do. And that's not an easy thing to do. But when you talk about consistency, we don't want consistent styles of leadership within our business. All we're after is a consistently good result. And it comes back to that really important measure that I talked about before. As long as we're getting consistently good happy indexes in all of the different parts of our business, we tend to know that all of the other results that are so important to us as a business will look after themselves. And we're really brutal on this. You know, we will, and it's happened in times gone by, you know, one of the sort of the things that we do as a business is we allow any colleague in any shop to pay out £500 from the till to settle a complaint there and then, rather than the customer have to wait and get, you know, screwed around and get sent to customer support and so on and so forth. And about 3 years ago, we heard some rumors, because when that £500 is paid out of the till, it doesn't affect the colleague's bonus in the shop. It affects the area team's bonus. And so about 3 years ago, we heard some rumors that some area managers were trying to limit that number to below £500. So when we found out about that, you know, you would think that we would kind of, you're not allowed to do this anymore. You've got to, well, the approach that we took was we doubled it. So now every colleague in the business can pay out £1,000 to their customers to settle a complaint. And as you very rightly said, it's not easy for all leaders, because what you're looking for in leaders is people that really do bring their colleagues with them. You know, they are supporting them to get a job done rather than telling them how to do it. And so when you look at it in a truly upside down way, all of the leaders in our business are there to support the colleagues that they are supposedly leading or managing in helping remove the barriers to them getting the job done. That's all it is. It's making their lives as easy as possible so that they can serve customers in the best way that they possibly can and put more money in the till.
I'm just really reflecting on that one question, because Simon and I are trying to stress test, how do you measure engagement? How do you measure loyalty? At SAP, we're asked the question, are you proud to work at SAP? And I always maintain, nobody can force you to say yay or nay. Right? You either are or you're not. And I think, you know, if people are saying, yes, I am, why would you lie? So I'm sort of thinking already in terms of your colleagues every day, you know, if somebody was to say, oh yeah, I gave a 9, but I don't really feel a 9, is that really going to happen? But I imagine you must stress test it from time to time, that there is a complete honesty and integrity in how people are answering that question.
So we don't stress test the how are you feeling score. Although over time it's become pretty clear that, you know, we're sort of happy with the accuracy of that, because there's no reason for a colleague to give an inaccurate reading. We are very, very happy that the Happy Index, that yearly report that we do or survey that we do, we're really happy with the sort of integrity of that. The reason for that is that we've been doing it for so many years now. And the process that we go through to sort of achieve an integrous result, have got a good experience of that and understand the process. You know, and the only people that kind of see the true and honest feedback that is down to which colleague said what are James and our colleague support director, Goy. All we then offer our leaders within the business is sort of summarized feedback to say, the group of colleagues that you look after are really happy with X, Y, and Z. They're really not happy with this other thing. And so you need to write to them to commit to improving upon that area for next year. So yeah, I think, you know, we're happy with the integrity of it, but I could absolutely appreciate that it's not an easy thing to know for sure.
Absolutely. And I think it's just, and again, why we raised it is because I think it's one of those perennials that everybody's wrestling with. And there's that real debating point of, how do we measure? How do we know? You know, we talk about sentiment, we talk about listening, you know, and that's what you're doing every day. You're listening every day, which I absolutely adore. Right, I am conscious of the clock, and I'm going to go to the last question, if that's okay. So as a takeaway, people listening today, in the context of this conversation, what would be two tips that Will would leave people to think about, your pieces of advice or wisdom that you picked up?
Mike, I'm only 33 years old, so I don't know if I've got any wisdom, so to speak. But one piece of advice I would give is on the wall behind me, and you already touched on it at the beginning, but that is to work hard and be nice to people. And I think the second probably is that we are by no means perfect as an organization. And I think often a lot of the sort of downfalls or issues, challenges that are faced within businesses are encountered when businesses look for perfection. And we actually openly say, we don't want to be perfect. We look for 80%, you know, and if that 80% is kind of, we get all the colleague stuff right, and some of the other stuff isn't quite there, we're really happy with that. And that would be the advice I'd give to others, is look for 80%, because if you look for 100, it'll probably go wrong.
Yeah, embrace the imperfection, isn't it? And then just lastly, a final one. You're a senior leader in the business and you've been there a long time. And it doesn't matter if you're 33, we're always picking up wisdom. When you put your head on the pillow at night and you reflect on this organization that you're part of and you're clearly proud of, what is that one thing that you sort of think and it puts a smile on your face?
Well, when I put my head on the pillow at the moment, my son's got strep. So there's not a huge amount of sleeping going on anyway. But you know, I would say I'm incredibly proud of the culture that we've got within the business. And do you know what? It's great for me. I'll meet new people, and the amount of people that I meet that come to me and they say, oh, I went into, you know, X, Y, or Z shop the other day, and the person who was serving customers, they were just amazing. You know, and I asked them, is it all actually kind of, is it true? Is the hype all true about it? And yeah, they said, yeah, you know, it's a great place to work. I really want to stress this. We're not perfect. And I never want people to think that, you know, we are anywhere near it. But there is a genuine desire, particularly from the family that own our business, to do right by their people. And that's something that I'm really proud of, to work in a business where, you know, our chief exec and our chairman genuinely care.
Yeah, it matters, doesn't it? Will, this has been a brilliant conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and giving us a glimpse into the world of Timpson. And I think, you know, hopefully our listeners will have picked up many of the things that you do every day that enable you to live that culture. Because that's ultimately the thing that I think we're all trying to understand better, is what are these things that we can do every day? But then not just say it, but follow it through. And there was one thing you said there, when you do your happy index, you're saying to your area managers, you commit to what you are going to do to improve on the things that people are not happy about. And again, that's the proof in the pudding. It's the rigor, isn't it? So, Will, thank you so much. We really appreciate you being a guest. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Simon, when we were designing and, you know, working on the podcast, I think Timpson was one of the first names in the brainstorm, because I read about them. I wanted to know more about how, you know, how and why, and get behind the curtain, you know, a little bit. And I think we really did get that today. What were your takeaways?
So first and foremost, I think Will was great. Came across as a very engaged individual, but I think the story itself was very engaging. Some people won't know it. I'll be honest, I didn't know it as well as I do now, you know, before we started the recording. But even saying, you know, through the conversation, he was saying things sometimes that seemed counterintuitive, you know, about not measuring very much. But we dug into that a little bit as to, you know, is that intentional or is that as a result of, you know, lack of systems or whatever. And it was very interesting that, okay, we put a lot of focus on what we do measure, and we value and particularly pull out the happiness bit of that measurement. Yeah, and then we drilled into the fact that, but hang on, you are running a business here as well and need controls. You can't just sort of have free format, do whatever you like, which would have been implied if you were listening to some of the conversation, you know, about, you know, looking after a pet parrot and, you know, giving away stuff out the till and all those sort of things. It still had a commercial aspect to it. And I loved the way he then brought it back by saying, you know, if we do have somebody that is not meeting those key values and those key rules that they put in place, and as a reminder, it's, you know, put the money in the till and act the part. If they're not fulfilling those, then they have a very quick conversation about finding happiness elsewhere. And I love the way that that's described. It's not, you're not good enough for us. It's, you, we need to find you, you know, happiness elsewhere. I thought Will had a very good turn of phrase in how he's describing things. And it was clear that it was actually in, you know, ingrained in him, what he was saying, because of how he said it. How about yourself?
I agree with that. I agree. And that's why, in some respects, I asked that last question about when you put your head on the pillow and, you know, you think about your time at Timpson and you're a senior leader, you know, what do you think? And you're right. It's the pride and the belief in what they do. You know, I think, you know, we almost feel duty bound in some respects to be that devil's advocate when we have these conversations, to stress test and don't just take it at face value. And you stress tested the point about the data. Is that because you can't get it, or is it by design? No, it's by design. Okay. So, you know, they're very clear on, and I have to be honest, my biggest takeaway was they measure every day somebody's happiness. It's simple in many respects. You ask a simple question and you get a response, but then depending on the answer, something happens or it doesn't happen. And I just absolutely loved that. And I think that's the DNA of this organization. And like you, I knew a bit about the story, but not as much as I picked up today. But they don't aspire to be perfect. They don't strive for perfection. They know they're not great at everything. They're a learning organization, which again, I think was really interesting. They take ideas from other places. But the big one for me was, how do you preserve your culture? And they have a committee, don't they, which is called Cut the Crap. And it's just about keeping them true to actually who they are. And you made the comment that I think during the COVID and all that period, they were starting to digress, but they've now pulled themselves back. And I think that, for me, is a great, great takeaway. Are we ensuring that we're not hurting ourselves? Are we ensuring that we're staying true?
I think from a personal perspective, what I do enjoy, especially about the conversations we have with organizations like this, is you get to shine a light on what's going on and what's happening behind the scenes. And some of it's just great. You know, you hear about Janet, the director of happiness. Yeah. You hear about Cut the Crap Committee, or about the shop that, you know, that one of his customers were going a whole day, can you look after my parrot for a week? Yeah, these just little stories, these little anecdotes that bring that business to life. Mm-hmm. And it just shows you a completely different perspective. And we had it with all sorts of the, you know, different customers we've talked to. And you just get these little nuggets that just make it real. You know, it's not some sort of story that's written on a wall or written in a book or something. This is real, and it's very real for them. And I love that bit.
I am absolutely with you completely. And you're right. You know, we're very privileged that we are able to have the conversation. We don't take it for granted at all. And I know that I'm going to repeat many of these anecdotes and many of the points that we picked up today in the conversations we're going to have in the coming weeks. So huge, huge thank you to Will. And I hope people who are listening to the conversation take away some of the points and can do something with them. Now, that's the key thing. So, Simon, another great episode. Until the next time, goodbye.